Good morning, evening, James McGrath. How are you, sir?
Andy G-Funk Gaunt. How are you doing?
G-Funk. Wow. I mean, there we go. Straight off the bat, I'm changing my Instagram name to Andy G-Funk.
So much drama in the Mel BC. It's really hard being Mr. Andy G. I've spent the past few days on the West Coast, and so, of course, I've been listening to loads of West Coast rap.
Listen to you. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more West Coast than a pom in the States, is there?
Exactly. And look, I'm all set up. Look, I've got my big gulp. I've got my coffee. It's 5:30 in the morning, and I'm like wired. I'm feeling good. Look at you. You're laid back.
I'm up to whiskey already. There's me. And look, if I grab the phone and tilt this.
It's Choco.
That's Sullivan.
Sullivan.
Yeah.
Come on. Is it really Sullivan or is it Choco?
I'm not even going to dignify that with a response. Guys, we're back. Welcome to Curb and Canyon. So I have to be honest about something.
Uh-oh.
You know your good friend Denis Villeneuve?
Yeah. Legendary F1 driver.
Yeah, or the other Denis Villeneuve. So I didn't actually think this recording was going to happen. If I'm honest, I gotta be honest, I didn't think it was going to happen. So I was in the middle of watching Dune when you messaged me and said, yo, I'm up. And I was like, oh, shit. Be right there.
It's been one of those occasions, hasn't it? Well, like the past couple of weeks, we haven't made it. And you're in the middle of a pretty epic movie. Are you enjoying it? Am I ruining your Friday nights?
it is. It's good. Well, because Kath and my daughter Indy were out. Ryder's busy playing video games as he always is, and I thought, I reckon there's a good chance I will not hear from you. I'm gonna sit down and watch Dune. So, yeah, it's it's the thinking man's sci-fi, isn't it?
Well, not really, because I spend the best part of 3.5 hours just thinking about Rebecca Ferguson. So, if that's what you mean by a thinking man's sandwich, then absolutely.
Okay, so that's an interesting point, isn't it? So, you enjoyed the film.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Okay, I was about to say, because if you enjoyed it, then it's clearly not a thinking man's sci-fi. Well, hey, do you know what? It's been a while. We've got a lot to get through, and interestingly enough, do you know what I always love is when I look at my show notes, things that we're going to talk about, and everything in there is so incredibly out of date. So we're going to wing it a little bit in this episode, right? But we got stuff to talk about. There's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there's loads to talk about. And look, let's face it. You always follow the show notes. I'm lucky if I open the show notes. So I'm always winging it. It's going to be great, Andy. It's going to be absolutely awesome. I'm going to pick the first topic. Let's talk about the 911 ST. Can we talk about that? Or do you want to go somewhere else first?
Well, do you know what? I did actually just want to mention and pay tribute to, if I could, the two Goodyear test drivers who tragically lost their life on the Nordschleife just today in a tyre test driving a Porsche. So Christian Frank, and we don't know who the other passenger was, but yeah, just awful. You know, no one should die doing that. And very, very sad news.
Yeah, man. Really, really sad news. I guess they say, you know, you should go out doing something you love. I hope that's what they did.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, it's funny, that phrase, isn't it? I find that a difficult one because I don't want to die behind the wheel of my car. I just want to die old and in bed and asleep if I can.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. But anyway, our thoughts are certainly with their family and friends and all the people who were there. So, I felt we should start with that acknowledgement.
I like that. You're a good lad.
One tries. So, on to other topics. Yes, let's talk about the thing that's been dominating the Porsche landscape for the last 2 weeks, the 911 ST. Can we just start with the very simple thing? Are you a yay or a nay?
Oh, that's so difficult. I'm...
What are you, on the fence?
It's not that I'm on the fence. I'm a yay and a nay. So if that means I'm on the fence, I'm on the fence. But it also means...
Dude, you're so far on the fence, it's like right up your crack.
Yeah.
Like if you've got one foot on either side of it.
Exactly. I've got like splinters up my ass crack, basically. I'm so on the fence with this thing. I mean, so first of all, and this is my ignorance, I didn't know there was a 911 ST. Has there been a 911 ST before? From the marketing photos, I would presume yes, because there was an old blue Porsche parked next to this beautifully brand new blue Porsche. Honestly, I've never come across the 911 ST. For all I know, Dieter, Hans, and Fritz sitting around in the Porsche marketing department were like, what should we call this new 911? I don't know. Sugar tits. That's great. Let's call it Porsche 911 Sugar Tits. I don't know. What is It's like they're coming out with so many variants right now. It's like I'm suspicious.
You think that in the midst of that, Andreas Preuninger has said, you know what we haven't had? We've not had 911 Sugar Tits. This is our moment.
Just think, if we call it Sugar Tits, we can charge €300,000. You know, there's my awesome German accents, which are, you know, Entschuldigung. Jesus Christ. Entschuldigung to the German listeners. But no, I didn't, honestly, I've heard of the R, I've heard of, you know, all of the other stuff. It's like every couple of months they're coming out with these new variants and I'm excited. They're awesome. They look fantastic. But at the same time, they're only going to make a handful of them. The majority of them are going to sit in rich people's garages and not get driven the way they should be. Maybe down to Cars and Coffee and back. I'll probably never get to see one. So as much as I'm like drooling looking at the press and looking at the media, I'm also sitting there thinking, you know, I might as well be watching the Starship Enterprise because I've probably got more chance of hitting Warp 9 in the Enterprise D than I have of actually driving a 911 Sugar Tits.
Far out. Well, I mean, look, it may have been that Sugar Tits live somewhere in the original genesis of this car, but let me educate you a little bit. I don't know a whole lot, but you don't know shit. And it worries me.
You don't know a whole lot, but you know more than me. So please enlighten me.
Facts. Well, so the 911 ST was a lightweight racing car in the early 70s where they took and don't quote me. And in fact, I think as far back as actually the late 60s. And it was actually a combination of the ethos of the 911S and the 911T. So the power of the S, but with the simplicity and the lightweight of the T. This is pre-73 RS, remember. And it is a car that has been replicated many a time. Your classic Singer certainly references the 911 ST with its flared arches. And I know our good friend Rick from Rico Customs, his builds really reference the ST, as do some of Magnus Walker's builds. So this is a car with a storied motorsport Porsche history around it. So it's one of those ones that if you know, you know. And so for them to rebirth that badge, so to speak, I think that's a little piece of marketing genius.
Okay. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And actually, you know, it's always been a car that I've loved, and you know, a lot of it's no accident that a lot of backdates find their way into having sort of that ST look. As for the car itself, I'm not on the fence, but I have some issues. So I'm such a fan. I'm a massive, massive fan from the get-go. You know, I wasn't actually paying so much attention when the 911R was released. I was sort of in the, let's say, the Porsche wilderness at that in that moment. So the hubbub that came with that car at its launch was lost on me. I wasn't involved. I wasn't paying attention. So when I first started looking at buying a Porsche, I consumed every piece of 911R content there was, because suddenly I was able to. And I remember watching Camisa's review on it and Joey from Friends, and just thinking, this thing looks amazing. And I actually loved it with the green stripes. I just thought, that just looks killer. So big fan of that, but I didn't get to experience the moment when it was released. This ST, I love the fact that the release car that they dropped in the videos was black. Porsche don't, I can't they don't think do of that. Another yeah. black press release car they've had. And I know they had that cool new blue that they've released as well that had the Heritage graphics pack on it. But there was something about that black, and it's not even a metallic black, black 911 with the silver Porsche script, those silver wheels, which are BBS wheels, I hear. I just think it looks perfect. And, you know, the ethos behind it of more power, less weight. Do you know, James, the car weighs less than my 964.
Really?
Less than my 964 by a good margin. By a good margin. Like I think it's like 70 kilos lighter than my 964.
That really surprises me. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And with, what is it, 550 horses? So, and then to hear Preuninger talk about it, you know, the fact that they've done, and obviously we haven't seen a road test of this yet, but it's the suspension setup is a road bias suspension setup versus the GT3 RS's very track bias suspension setup.
Yeah.
Like I say, we're yet to see any tests, any reviews, but it seems to me on paper to be the ultimate road-going 911. And as my pal Anthony said to me, he said, it's literally like Porsche reached into my head, grabbed everything I've been thinking about that would make the ultimate road-driving 911 and built that car. So that's my foot in the absolute yes camp. But like you, there's 1,963 of these things going to be made. You know, who's going to get them? All the people who buy a shit ton of Macans and 911s for their families and get special treatment, you know, via the dealers. Are we ever going to see one tearing up the hills? Other than when Chris Harris or Henry Catchpole or any number of these guys drop a video, no. I think I will never see one in the wild. A couple will make it to Australia at best. And if I'm lucky, I will see one at Cars and Coffee, or 3 years from now, I'll see it at Dutton's Garage where I get my morning coffees, where there's often incredible cars. But I don't expect to ever see nor hear, let alone experience one in the wild.
So that's a very interesting perspective. The combinations of the S and the T, literally the S and the T, I hadn't considered that. I just went straight for the joke. But when it was described originally, I think I heard from a friend, somebody, it was either in one of the press releases or somebody mentioned it's basically the GT3 RS, but without the wing, and like a slightly more aggressive touring package, which is basically what Jerry Seinfeld did with his 991.2, right? He bought himself a GT3 RS. He took the wing off it, and that was his car. So another reason why I'm on the fence, because I really don't like Jerry Seinfeld at all.
You don't like Jerry Seinfeld?
No, he just, he's an arrogant prick.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway.
And you call yourself a comedian. Okay, so here, look at this. So, 964 C4. Now, granted, the C4 is heavier than a C2, right? So, but my car is a C4, which weighs 1,450 kilograms. The new 911 ST weighs 1,380 kilos. So, on the flip side. Yeah, and so a 964 C2, I think, is 100 kilos less than a C4, meaning that would be 1,350. So it's only 30 kilograms, which is what, 10 pounds? Something like that? No, it's 60 pounds.
That's about 60 pounds, yeah.
About 60 pounds heavier than a 964 C2. So, but with all of that power, I suppose the only question I have is, should Porsche be making more of these cars? Should they make it available to us?
Selfishly, yeah, I think they should.
I mean, you and me can't buy one anyway, but if we had the means, if I said to you, James, I'm going to move to Minnesota, what about you and me go halves and we will buy a 911 ST? Don't you think we should be able to?
Let's go halves and buy a set of wheels for the 911 ST. We'll build a paper mache frame around a set of wheels that we own and we'll call
it'll be like that episode of Friends where Joey had the cardboard boxes under the Porsche car cover.
We'll call it the SB, the ship box, the 911 ship box.
Not sugar box?
You know, the sugar, well, yeah, or sugar bum. Who knows? All right, let's move off. So, like, I'm split. I love the fact that even though this means that I won't get one, I love the fact that, you know, they're picking the number that they're making intentionally, and it's a limited run. There aren't too many of them. At the same time, though, I feel like, If somebody can afford that car, they should be allowed to buy that car. And if Porsche, you know, planned on making 1,963, but there was enough demand for it and they ended up making, you know, one more or 10 more or 100 more or 1,000 more on demand, I think that should be the way. I think that's the way it should be. I'm not saying they should bring the price down. I'm not saying that they should just saturate the market with an endless supply of cars. But if you can afford it, if you're that much of an enthusiast that you want that car, you should be allowed to place an order for it and get it.
And what sort of number plate would you put on it? Like SUGATIT or?
I think I just go straight for the TITS.
So here's my thing as well, right? Okay, so if you put aside the frustrations around allocation and, you know, the same old thing we talk about every time one of these special Porsches drop, that we're never going to see it and it's going to be bought by old mate rich dude who keeps it in his garage. Cast all of that to the side for a second. In evaluating the car in just objective terms based on my reaction, my first response to it, I think it looks amazing. I think on paper, the spec, the philosophy behind it sounds amazing. So all of the issues aside around build numbers and allocations, I think the car, having not seen a review yet, I think it's incredible. I want one. I would sell my kids to get one happily. probably not the dog, but I would trade the kids for sure. I would definitely want one. Definitely want one. It's to me, I can't remember a new Porsche launch. And as I say, I wasn't really paying attention when the R came out. I can't remember a new Porsche launch that has excited me the way this one did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's fair enough. I get this excited every time a new one is released, frankly. And I'm like, oh, I've never been this excited about a Porsche before. And 6 weeks later, here comes the SB. Oh my God, it's amazing. I don't want to beat a dead horse here. And we talked about this a couple of times already, though. How on earth have they managed to make a car which is quite literally twice the size of your 964 lighter than your 964? That's amazing to me. Absolutely amazing to me. I mean, I'm presuming they've got all the lightweight glass, which shaves off a few pounds here and there.
It's all carbon fiber.
Magnesium fiber everywhere.
Yeah, no rear wheel steer, because they wanted a quote-unquote pure driving experience, but B, it adds a ton of weight. No PDK option, because that's obviously heavier than the manual. It's clearly a feat of engineering. And it is funny, you know, I've been seeing a lot more 992s on the road of late, and it's funny how you just over time adjust. So if I see one of those, or even a 991 next to something like a 964 or a G-body car, yes, they look comparatively massive. But on their own, or even compared with other cars on the road, they're not that big. Yeah. And they're barely any bigger than a 991.
Fair enough. That's true. That's true.
I'd take one. I'd definitely take one.
Absolutely would not kick one out of bed. And I absolutely love the and this is going to be a nice, interesting segue actually to to the next topic of conversation. The color, the Shaw Blue metallic color.
Yeah.
I really like it.
I like it a lot. There's a new green as well. Is it sage green or something? Yeah.
Shade green.
There you go. Yeah. You've got the configurator up as we speak.
That's right. And
you did a configuration though, right? You did Oslo Blue from memory.
I did. Yeah, that's pretty much my favorite Porsche color of all time, actually, I think. What about you? What would your favorite color be?
I've configured a few. Do you know what? I mean, I've said to a few people, I would just take that launch spec car. That'll do me. I like a Ratium green. I'm a big fan of that.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of like a leaf green. Leaf. And actually, I really like forest green metallic. I know I've already got a car that color, but I love that. But I love it on a modern 911. I think it looks really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
And imagine that garage.
I honestly think forest green metallic is top three, maybe at most top five of all time Porsche colors. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. So what other colors are piquing your interest at the moment in the Porsche world, even outside of 992s?
I would say graphite blue metallic.
It's a pretty special color.
And it just so happens, Andy, it's a pretty special color. And actually, it's not too dissimilar from that Shaw Blue metallic, according to the configurator here. All right, let's move on next topic of conversation.
Fess up. What's going on with Bluey first? Can Bluey hear you?
Bluey can't hear me. I've put it in the soundproof box in the garage, where you can't even hear kids scream. So, you know, it's pretty special. So Bluey, I've just come back from the Tale of the Dragon, right? And it was incredible and absolutely amazing.
Let's park that. We're going to talk about Tale of the Dragon in a minute. I want the full rundown on that.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, I walk into the garage, I see Bluey, my eyes light up, absolutely love it. But this, I feel like I've got to the point with Bluey where I have with my black 997, where I don't want to touch it anymore because it's done. You know, it's like I've done all the mods I've done to it. It's been up on the lift. It's been down. It's been into the garage. It's had this done to it, that done to it. I've driven it on some of the best roads in the country several times. You know, and it's time for a new project. And I didn't think I was going to get there with Bluey, because I've actually had Bluey now for 2, maybe 3 years, which is the longest I've ever held onto a 911. And I thought I was going to keep Bluey forever. But then I've just come back from the Tale of the Dragon. And actually, that's not the real reason. That's part of the reason. I came back from Tale of the Dragon and I thought, you know what? All right, I've done it now. I've taken Bluey to Tale of the Dragon twice. That was awesome. I'm looking forward to going out to Rennsport Reunion with it in California in the summer. I'm sort of getting to that point where I've had enough, but no, I'm going to keep it forever. I talked myself into keeping it forever. My mate Chris, what does he do? He's just finished his project Turbo. He and I have spent the past year or so modding his Turbo up to the tops. Chris has gone and got himself a 991.2 GT3 Touring.
Son of a bitch.
Perfect. It is, Andy, it is. I haven't even seen it yet. In fact, I'm seeing it later today. I've got to take Bluey in to get a few things fixed and into the store, and he and I are going to hook up for lunch. And he's going to eat lunch while I sit basically in the parking lot licking the center lock wheels, drooling over the Touring.
Just stay away from the exhaust pipes, all right?
Exactly. So he went and bought himself a Touring.
Yeah, amazing. And I think you shared a picture of it, right, on social?
Yeah. He's put a couple up on social. It's white, so not the most exciting color in the world.
No, but doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in a Touring. And
Yeah.
And it big congratulations. What a score.
Massive. Absolutely. And the funny thing was, he went to Porsche in Minneapolis to buy a bolt, to buy like a $12 bolt.
It came out with a GT3 Touring.
Dude, yeah. He's trying to fix, I think he was trying to either take off his tailpipes to clean them, or I don't know what, but he basically threaded a bolt and he needed a new bolt. So he went to Porsche in Minneapolis. As he pulled up in the parking lot, they're basically taking this Touring off the back of a truck. They haven't had it for more than, like, I don't know, like, let's say an hour. And he walks in and he's like, is that a Touring over there? And they're like, oh, yeah, it's just come in. And he was like, huh, can I take it for a test drive? And they were like, I guess so. We haven't fired it up yet. You know, they literally just took it off the back of the truck, gave him the keys. 10 minutes later, he's back in the dealership sitting down. He's selling his Turbo. He's buying his Touring. Amazing.
Good on him. Well played.
Absolutely good on him. Oh, yeah. But it's like, it's got everything he wants. Anyway, long story short, Chris has got this Touring. You should go and check him out on Instagram, Carbon Fiber Chris. And of course, there is carbon fiber everywhere in this Touring. He probably doesn't need to do anything with it. It's perfect. It really is a dream spec. We can talk about that separately. But so Chris tells me about this Touring. I'm absolutely amazed. I'm blown away for him. I'm happy for him. I go to sleep. I can't sleep. I start looking at Auto Trader and I'm like, maybe I should get a new car. So as it happens, the car that I talked about 6 months ago, you know, when I went to Amelia Island.
I remember.
All right. So that graphite blue metallic 911 is still on the market, for better or worse, 5 months later. And the price has come down to a spot where, you know, it's kind of in my striking zone. Right. So, you know, again, 3 a.m, can't sleep, send the dealer an email. Hey, is it still available? I wake up in the morning. This guy has sent me like 3 videos and 100 photos. And I'm just like lying there, not getting out of bed for work, drooling over this thing.
To quote Huey Lewis, you woke up this morning under a tent.
So I've basically spent the past week convincing myself day to day, stay with Bluey, sell Bluey, keep Bluey, sell Bluey, get this car as well as Bluey. Anyway, long story short, I'm going to be putting Bluey up for auction. It's going to go on P-Car Market. And I'm going to be picking up this 991.2 in a couple of weeks when I'm on my way back from a business trip in the south of the country. So I'll fly there, I'll do my job, I'll pick up the car, and I'll drive it home. And hopefully, I mean, it's not a done deal yet. I still find myself going backwards and forwards, and my car isn't on P-Car Market yet. But like, I'm cleaning it tonight, I'm getting some photos taken of it in the morning. So like,
once you do photos, it's done, man. Once you take photos,
you think so?
For me, that's always the thing. It's like, you take photos and at that point, yeah, you're gone.
So, but I think just completely by accident, not by design, I'm getting excited about the Porsche 911 sugar tits. And I'm looking at this 991.2 and I'm thinking, okay, well, the color's not too dissimilar. The wheels are not too dissimilar. The wheels don't look too dissimilar from the Carrera S wheels, and they're in chrome, and the interior, which in the, at least in the the press release, it's black with white DVA stitching. My interior of this new blue 911 is white with black with white DVA stitching.
You don't need to connect it to the ST to make it rad. It's rad.
No, well, fair enough. But
so tell me spec. What are we talking? What are we talking? Let's get into it. And first of all, I mean, big congratulations. It's funny to me. I don't know why. And maybe it's because when I first came across you and your channel, you had the Agate Grey 991. I just always picture you in a 991. It just seems like your car to me. So that just feels right to me. And I think, you know, we've spoken on the show before numerous times about the 991.2 being, you know, that's just the sweet spot. And I'm pumped for you. So tell me spec. Let's get into this.
Well, it's exciting in that it's not so exciting. It's another Carrera.
Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, so I've been flirting with the idea of getting a GT3. I've been flirting with the idea of potentially moving into turbo territory. And actually, this is a base Carrera, rear wheel drive Carrera coupe. It's nothing fancy from that regard, but I've got a friend here in the Twin Cities who has a base Carrera, and actually I think it's the same color, graphite blue metallic, but with black wheels. This has got chrome wheels. He has that thing tuned, and it's easy. Just as fast as a lot of the other cars that are out there with the wings and the, you know, some of the GT specs.
Dude, it's a 10-minute job.
It's a 10-minute job, and he's taken a 370 stock engine and pushed it close to 500 horses. I mean, that's turbo territory, right?
Yeah.
Turbos,
yeah.
What, 500? I mean, we're talking here about the ST. That's 520 or something horses. So just by doing a simple tune, spending, you know, $1,500, I can take a base Carrera and get sort of turbo-level kind of performance out of it. That is really exciting to me. And why the 991.2? I haven't had a turbocharged engine before. All of the ones I've had previously have been naturally aspirated. All of the mods that I've done to the cars that I've owned before have largely been sort of aesthetic changes. You know, I've changed the wheels. I've put stripes on. I've changed the color. Apart from Bluey, of course, when I had to replace the engine and the transmission. Look and feel of this car that I'm picking up is basically just perfect. Apart from putting a few stripes on it, maybe, and sticking a set of yellow seatbelts in the interior. Apart from that, I might not even do that. What I'm interested with the 991.2 is actually trying to play around with performance tweaks this time. So do the engine tune, do the PASM, is it the DSC controller, maybe lower it. Maybe think about suspension.
Yes, let's lower the car. Please, can we lower the damn car?
I will concede. So I'm actually looking forward to doing sort of a bunch of mods that I've never really paid attention to before.
Yeah.
With a new engine, with a generation that I haven't had before, because my 991 previously was the .1. So it feels like new territory. It feels like, you know, a little bit of a breath of fresh air. Getting myself into a slightly younger car as well is going to be fun. And, you know, it's a good excuse to make another year's worth of YouTube videos, basically.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I sent you just this week, Tommy L. Garage, he dropped a video of doing one of these tunes to his 991.2 Carrera T, 125 horsepower, plug in a laptop, boom, done. Now he's running Soul Performance exhaust. He's got the cats, that whole setup, which kind of struck me as being the James McGrath spec. So I'm really excited for this. I think this is just going to be the perfect car for you.
I'm pretty excited. Now the challenge is I've got to get Ruthie on board.
Well, you know the old phrase, good sir, ask forgiveness, not permission.
Oh, I thought you were going to say happy wife, happy life. No, you're right. I'm going to follow your one.
Yeah, yeah. but also, just talk about, you're actually doing this for her. You know, you've been enjoying these cars. You've been enjoying getting out on the road. But doing this sort of spirited driving, it's not safe doing it in an old car. You know, and the 996 has been around a while now. What you need all of the safety, the airbags, that sell now, the crash structure. You know, the cars have come such a long way. And you know, as a husband, as a father, how would you sleep at night if you're not driving a safe 911? If anything, she should be thanking you.
Mate, I appreciate that. And you can probably expect a phone call from her in about 3 days as I tell her to speak to you. Because she's no longer listening to me and throwing plates at me.
Yeah, listen, to be honest, if she does call me, I would love to chat to Ruthie. We've never really had a conversation. I feel like she's my kind of gal. We get along. And honestly, if she called me, I'd say, well, I never said that. I think James is losing his mind. I don't know why he wants a new car. I certainly wouldn't buy a new car. I'll just throw you well and truly under the bus.
I appreciate that, good sir. I appreciate that.
So, well, that's, as I say, great news. I believe in spite of you being, let's say, a little circumspect about this absolutely going forward, there's a whole lot of things to me that say this absolutely will go ahead. Once you're taking photos of your car, that's it. It's done. There's a little psychological line that gets crossed when you take the photos to sell your car. So I'm certain that's happening. And, you know, this particular car has been swimming around in your head now for months. It's very exciting. I'm really pleased for you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks.
It's interesting, isn't it? The acquisition thing too, because you know, obviously your friend Chris with his GT3 Touring, what a car! And I feel like every time you and I record, I am congratulating yet another friend of mine for scoring a car. And I'm sure our audience just thinks, Jesus, what is with these people? But my pal PJ just picked up a 993 C2 coupe in manual in speed yellow. And this thing is the last year of the 993. Yeah, the most fully realized and developed version of the air-cooled 911 engine is that car. And this thing's a peach. I'd actually seen it a bunch of times at 9 Auto. It's had its life being serviced there. It's gorgeous. I've not seen it on the road yet. But, yeah, PJ, well scored, my friend.
Yeah, good job, PJ. Let me ask you this. I've come across a couple of people recently that have a similar opinion of the 993 owning 964s as people owning 993s have with 996 owners. So these 964 owners have essentially said, you know what, I don't like the 993. They've changed it too much. You know, it's just the 964 is where it's at. That's the true Porsche. Where 993 owners have been telling me, everybody knows that when the 996 was released, the whole world blew up because everybody was gutted that it wasn't the 993 anymore and it was water cooled and blah, 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 blah. I think the 993 is gorgeous. I love the 964 on its own. I love the 993 on its own. I can see where Porsche have decided to make some changes and tweaks. Obviously, there are some differences between the cars, but it's still a 911 for all of the things we love 911s or four. You're a 964 owner. What do you think of the 903?
Well, it's a really interesting phenomenon that you mentioned because I actually think it goes across all the generations, actually. I think G-body owners tend to talk about how they never liked the 964 because they thought the bumpers kind of looked bulbous and weird. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, you hear 997 owners talk about it being the sweet spot and the 991 suddenly got too big, and then 991 owners talk about the 992 big, too fun, right? Like, we always talk about that generation that came after our car with a level of dismissal.
Jealousy.
Yeah, jealousy, maybe, and it resentment. Maybe it is. Look, so the 993, I love the 993. I think a standard straight out of the box 993 coupe can at times look a bit apologetic. Just on the stock ride height. So look, I'm going to say this about the 993. I'll be very honest about one thing. I don't like cup two wheels. I really love cup ones, but I don't like cup twos. And I particularly dislike them when people put them on 964s. That's just me. If you've got cup twos on your car, more power to you. I'm sure it looks amazing and it's terrific, but I'm just not a fan of them. A bog standard 993 can sometimes look a little bit underdone on those rims. But that said, some of my all-time favorite cars are 993s. You know, the C4S, I remember the first time I saw that with the wide body, just blew my mind. And that 993 Turbo in Arena Red, which was the launch color.
Ooh.
Oh, man. I have my whole life obsessed over that car. And actually, just this week, I posted, in fact, 2 days ago, yesterday, day before, again at Dutton's Garage, where I get my coffees in the morning, they just took delivery of a Guards Red 993 Turbo. It is, with that wing, the kind of melted cheese rear spoiler. I love a 993. I really, really love a 993. So
melted cheese.
Yeah, look, because it's like they took the whale tail and just everything about that car looks amazing. And I genuinely believe that for the kind of driving I do, in terms of air-cooled 911s, a 993 Turbo would have to be the car that would perform best. All-wheel drive, insane power, small. Yeah, no, I'm not anti-993 at all. I'm actually a big, big fan. And one of my favorite cars to follow on a drive is my friend Kale. He has a silver 993 on speed lines, and that car is hot.
I'm all for the 993 Turbo. I think, you know, I think I've said it before, if you could take the 993 Turbo and basically just, you know, Photoshop
elongate it,
and the headroom, elongate it in both ways.
Yeah.
That would be an absolute dream. In fact, somebody asked me once, I think it might have even been you, if I could have Porsche make me.
Yeah, it was on this pod. My friend Anthony posed that question.
I would have them build me a 992 sized 993.
I was about to say, can you imagine how ridiculous that would look? But that's basically what Roof's current cars look like. They're big 964s.
Right. It's just like ordering, you know, the latest set of Jordans in a size 16 because you got big feet. That's all it is to me.
Sure. So you mentioned Tale of the Dragon. Let's get into it because it looked like it was pretty epic.
Oh, yeah. Such a great time. And for the first time, we had a cabin that no one could complain about. It was absolutely baller. It was just outside of town, Gatlinburg in Tennessee, which is like Dolly Parton has taken Disneyland and thrown up all over it. But it's still a very nice mountain kind of city. Before we talk about driving, this cabin, 10 bedrooms, 3 levels, it had a cinema, its own kind of like, you know, cinema room in the basement with the big screen and the big lazy boy chairs.
You just sat there watching Last Rasp videos.
Exactly, the whole time. It had a game room with an air hockey table and a pool table, and it had a hot tub, and it had this epic view of the mountains, and it was a really great place. Everybody loved the cabin, so that helped. The weather was great. I think we had a little bit of rain on the way there. I was actually thinking about you talking about your rally and how every time you do it, it's in the rain. Well, we drove like 10 hours through what was basically a hurricane.
Monsoon.
A monsoon, yeah. We had 80-mile-an-hour winds. We had our iPhones.
Oh, wow.
We had our iPhones blaring alerts at us every sort of half an hour, basically saying, find shelter. And we were like, we got to get to this cabin. Let's keep going. We've got to get to this cabin. So that was pretty hairy. But while we were there, beautiful weather. There wasn't too much traffic. I think on the first day we got to drive Tale of the Dragon, I think it was four times, maybe even six times, because I set the meet on the opposite side of the dragon to where we were staying, you know, unintentionally. So we had to drive the dragon to meet people, and then we drove across the dragon, and then the place I picked for lunch was on the other side of the dragon. So we drove back across the dragon, we had lunch. And then in order to get back to our cabin, we had to drive back across the dragon. So, yeah, we did the dragon four times on the first day.
How long does a lap take?
So it can take anywhere from maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes to half an hour, just depending on how busy the road is.
Yeah.
You know, what is it? 11 miles, 330 turns.
Yeah.
The first time we did it, there was like nothing on the road and we absolutely just went for it. It was our first mountain road, basically. We absolutely went for it. And I've never gotten sort of motion sickness before. But as we got about three quarters of the way in, I had to just like back off a little bit because I was starting to feel it. So I decided to just back it off a little bit. On the way back, a couple of bike cops decided today was the day they were going to catch people. And so our radar detectors were going off like nuts. So we had to just, you know, behave ourselves. I even got pulled over. I got pulled over doing 45 in a 35, which after you've done the dragon a couple of times, doing 45 on the dragon feels, it feels like you're walking. You know, the pace.
Yeah.
And when he pulled me over, I almost said to him, are you joking?
Yeah.
Are you having a laugh? Anyway, so he gave me a warning, didn't give me a ticket, which was nice. I have to say, though, this time, I think it was probably because my tires are relatively fresh, but there was just something about the conditions of the road that was like just preventing me from like pushing it to 105, 110%. You're sat here pissing yourself, giggling at me.
So I saw photos and, cause yeah, there's obviously photographers on the dragon, right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I assume they just, you get on their website and you find,
that's right.
Corner they're mm-hmm. on. Yeah, yeah.
And
when you were talking about driving through these sort of apocalyptic conditions to get there, I thought, well, hey, at least you've got the sort of post-apocalypse ride height on Blue. You know, the zombie apocalypse 9/11. So maybe that was holding you back. What tires are you running on, Bluey?
That's a good question. I actually don't know.
Oh,
can you? Yeah, I don't know. Really? They were
are they Michelin?
I think so. Isn't that embarrassing? I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. I can't remember. I think they're Michelins.
So yeah. That'd probably be a PS4, I would have thought, is available in the sizes for your 996. Michelin sizes are always tricky, but I would have thought PS4, which would be fine, I would have thought.
That's absolutely shocking. I can't believe I can't remember what tires are in my car, but yeah, let's say that.
I'm sorry to expose your lack of tire knowledge. but so go back to it. You just didn't feel confident pushing. Was that also because you were feeling a bit under the weather? You got a bit of motion sickness, is it?
Well, maybe so. I don't know. I just, you know, sometimes you're in the zone and you feel like there isn't anything that can take you off your line mm-hmm. as you're going through the chicanes and you're going from corners. And then there are other times where you're either second guessing the turn or you're second guessing the gear change. And you just, maybe it was just a mental thing, but I kind of felt like there were a couple of scenarios there where I sort of thought, you know what? In my mind, I was going to take that corner this way. And I ended up a split second decision the other way. And it didn't quite turn, you know, so I was kicking myself that way, I think a little bit. Maybe it was because of the motion sickness. I don't know.
Do you know what though? Because I have that. You have some days, like you say, where it's the old flow state thing, right? Like some days the car just feels. You know, if you've ever been go-karting, and when you're in a go-kart, you can just chuck the thing around. You don't even think about it. It just does whatever you want it to do. And sometimes your car feels like that. And on those days, yeah, it's like you'll just do anything. You feel so comfortable driving at speed. And then there are days where it just you're sort of having to force it. And I just do the thing now where I think, if I'm having to force it, no. I'm just backing off. And even if philosophically that doesn't make sense to me, and I'll give you an example. When we were in Tasmania last year, the last day, the last afternoon, we'd driven what I thought were our last set of twisties, and we got onto a highway. And I thought, okay, we've got an hour and a half to get to Devonport, where we're going to get on the ferry and come back to Melbourne, and it's just a cruise up the highway. I put on a podcast. I just got into a zone of, now I'm just cruising. We're done. But then we still ended up on this set of twisties, and it was big and high speed. And I was behind a couple of cars that theoretically on paper in my GT4, I should have had no trouble keeping up with. And certainly through the course of the weekend had not had any trouble keeping up with, but for whatever reason, I just felt like I was on the edge. I felt like I was pushing harder, and I don't know what it was, but it just felt, nah, it didn't feel right to me. So as soon as there was an opportunity, I just pulled to the side, let a few people get past me, and thought, I'll just sort of hang down the back, because I don't want to try and push it if I'm not feeling it, because you make mistakes and it's not worth it.
Exactly. Yeah, and I didn't pull over, because there really isn't too many places on the Tail of the Dragon to pull over. But big shout out to a couple of our friends that were with us, Mark and Matthew, driving a gorgeous, I think it's Speed Yellow 997 cab. Mark really goes for it. And last time we were there together, you know, every time you go around a corner, he's right behind you. And not uncomfortably so, but he drives pretty close to you. And you're both going for it. And you feel like, okay, I'm going to push it a bit more. And he pushes it a bit more. Well, he was behind me on this run of the Dragon, and even he told me afterwards, he was like, were you backing off? Are you okay? You know, like he got the sense.
You can always tell.
Yeah, he could, him and his son, they could even tell it was something wrong with me. And I was like, actually, yeah, I backed off a little bit, wasn't feeling it. You know, hope I wasn't holding you up. And of course I was, but they were very gracious about it.
do you run radios? Do you have radios?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'll usually just, we'll often just get on and say, like I might just say, or someone will often just jump on the radio and go, hey, do you guys want to get past me? Because I don't know if it's like this with your group, but we have not a pecking order, but you kind of know who drives at what speed. And you know that there are people like your mate with the yellow cab who, yeah, we're going to be around the same kind of pace and we'll push each other. And that's a good place to be. And so, therefore, he can tell if he's behind you that, okay, James isn't having a day today. Do you have that natural sense within the group of who sits where and who travels at what speed? Or do you sort of have to be at the front because you've organized everything?
That does happen a lot. You know, I think maybe this time was the first time I think that sort of dynamic has been, I guess, identified, because this, so Jay and I have been to Tail of the Dragon maybe together three or four times now. But he's usually at the front and I'm at the back, or vice versa, so we don't drive close to each other very often. Chris and I drive together all the time, and Chris's car is always a monster, so I know that he's going to be faster than me, and I try and go behind him if I can. But yeah, this is the second time we've had Mark and Matthew there. I think we probably, you know, we had Adam and Richie, who have been with us a couple of times before. I think we're still trying to figure out.
Yeah, it takes some time.
I think we're still trying to figure that out. If we all lived in the same place, I think it would be a different thing. But because we're all coming in from all over the country once a year. Yeah, I think we'll figure that out. But yeah, I do often go to the front. and lead the way.
That's a bit of pressure, though, right? Times.
It is. And actually, because I wasn't feeling it, I think on the first day or the second day, I volunteered to go to the back. And it was actually quite enjoyable to be at the back for a change instead of the front. Or the middle. What's funny, though, about the radios is 9 times out of 10, we're driving all over the mountains, you know, and we're driving to and from. The radios are really useful. When you're on the tail of the dragon, there's no opportunity really to get on the radio. You know, it's if your radar detector goes off, it's easier to just like honk your horn than it is to get on the radio, because there are just so many twists and turns. Like you're quite literally. It's almost like doing the slalom when you're skiing. You know, it's like left, right. So to get on the radio, you're probably risking driving off a cliff. But they're really useful. I'd say anybody that goes on a rally together, get some walkie talkies. They're really useful.
Yeah, no, massively. And we're actually pretty good at using them, even in the really tight twisty stuff, because, you know, so often here you'll have, there's potholes or there'll be a cyclist or a something. And just to be able to send that warning back down through the group, I think is really important. But yeah, we're lucky, I think, that we have, you know, with that core driving group that I drive with a lot, just a good shorthand where we all know how we kind of sit comparative to one another, and that kind of automatically creates a pecking order. And at least to my knowledge, I don't think anyone has an issue if I'm not leading. Yeah, because I kind of figure, hey guys, I've created the route, I've set it all up. I want you to enjoy today as much as possible. So I'm happy to lead, but equally, if you guys want to drive quicker than I'm going, well, the nav's there, it's doing its job. So, you know, feel free to be in front of me. I'm sort of happy being mid pack most of the time.
That's good. Have you got any more rallies coming up? What's going on with you at the moment?
Yeah. So we've got Tasmania coming in November, but actually day after tomorrow, we're doing the second running of the winter rally, which is a concept I came up with last year. There's typically, when we drive on a Sunday morning, there's a set of roads that we drive that do go through the hills, through the mountains. So during winter, you kind of want to avoid them because you can get snow or you can get black ice. Mm-hmm. So they can be a little bit sketchy. So there's a set of roads that exist to the southeast of Melbourne, that are probably not quite as technically challenging as the roads we would typically drive, but sorry, that's my dog shaking if you can hear that sound. they might not be as technically challenging as some of the roads we drive, but they're actually elevated. They're out of the bush, so you actually have lovely views and they're kind of flowing, and they're just a change because we don't drive them most of the time. So I've organized a single day rally on these roads. So it's a big day.
Oh, nice.
And we've got a lot of people coming on that rally who don't come to like Alpine Range Rally or the Tassie trip. So I'm really looking forward to driving with some of these other people. Most of whom I've driven with at various other times before and, you know, good dudes. So I think that's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to that. And then, yeah, Tasmania is the big, that's looming large. It's still a good couple of months away. And honestly, I feel like it can't get here quick enough. I'm really looking forward to it. November's
going to get here quick. I can't believe it's the middle of August already, man.
No, I know, right?
November's going to be here in no time.
Yeah, I agree. And look, if I'm really honest, I'm a little bit anxious about Tasmania in Little Green. You know, that was when I did the trip there last year, I remember saying to a few people, the roads down there, the setup down there, I could imagine being down there in a 992 GT3 and that not feeling like too much car. So,
wow.
So I think my, you know, little 33-year-old 964, you know, is going to feel, it's a knife to a gunfight. But that said, you know, my pal Gerard, he was there in his 964 last year and was driving the doors off the thing. And my buddy Erwin was in his 993, same thing. Steve was in his 930, same thing. So, you know, it's so funny with Little Green. I always underestimate how good that car is. Uh-huh, like, always, constantly. I do it all the time. And then I get in the car and go for a drive on the weekend and I keep up with everyone. That car is, it's amazingly capable. So I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be an absolute hoot in Tasmania. Can't wait. Can't wait.
If you ever start making videos again, Mr. Absent Last Rast, I think what would be a great video would be taking a sample of sports cars of similar age, of little green, and putting them on those roads and just seeing how capable the other cars are compared to the 911. Because I suspect that, you know, you get yourself a comparable Mercedes or BMW or Jag or who knows what, that 911 is going to outshine all of those being 33 years old. But for whatever reason,
I think you'd need to put it against, it'd be things like the NSX, which are, you know, similar age, that I think would, you know, genuinely give it a run for its money. But look, the truth is as well, the car is not what it was out of the box, and particularly the chassis setup on that car. And that's the thing that makes all the difference. And I remember getting back into it a few months ago and going on a drive, and I was keeping up with GT4s and dropping a GT4. So it's, it'll do it. The right road. It's a weapon in its own way. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, but I've been going through, so we've spoken about me doing the interior on that car, right? So
and actually, you, the last time we spoke, I mean, we need an update on the suspension, we need an update on your wheels, and you've been working on the interior as well, and actually I think since the last time we were on the pod, you've tidied your garage. Right?
Yeah, the garage has definitely come a long way. It's not there yet, but it's definitely come a long way. So, suspension all sorted, KW all sorted. They did a great job. Got the car back. It was great. A little bit of frustration and to and fro with the wheel alignment. I don't think the previous specs had been recorded, so we've just had a bit of trial and error on the alignment, and it's not been perfect. And actually, just this week, so I drove last weekend or the weekend before, I think it was last weekend, and towards the end of my drive, suddenly the rear end of the car started to feel a bit strange. Well, I got home and it had like 12 PSI in one of the tires, and and so I filled it back up, and I know that tire has had somewhat of a slow leak, and then it was losing 3 or 4 PSI every day. So I don't know what had happened. I'd pumped it up literally that morning before we went driving to 30, 35. So I took it to my tire place on Monday, and they got in touch with me and said, actually the BBS, the seal has gone, so it's leaking air. So actually what I did yesterday was I put my original Cup Ones back on the car. And they look great. However, I'll say this, they're a replica Cup One. They're not the real thing. And the real Cup Ones are actually magnesium, so they're lightweight. That difference between lightweight BBS E88s and replica Cup Ones in terms of the way the car feels on the road, and in particular small bump compliance, is actually quite dramatic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I remember thinking when I was getting the BBS that I was going from 17-inch to 18-inch, so lower profile tyres, it's probably going to be a little harsher in terms of ride quality. But in fact, the opposite was true, because they're just lighter, and so the suspension works easier, it does its job better. So, yeah, it doesn't feel as nice on the Cup Ones. And actually, to be fair, the alignment is probably optimised for the E88s rather than the cups as well. So not ideal, but anyways, the BBS is actually getting fixed. I'm collecting it tomorrow, so they'll be back on the car a lot sooner than I thought. But
you know, it's funny, it actually looks like a different car.
It does.
When you sent me that shot, I was like, wait a minute, is he showing me a mate's car that kind of looks similar? Like, even the color threw me, you know, that I was like, I'm not even sure that's, you know, whatever green it is that you've got.
Yeah. No, it's true. I agree. And actually, because it's the first time I've had the Cup 1s on the car with the amber turn signals. When I bought the car, Fraz, who owned it before me, had put on the clear turn signals. And I'd run them for a long time with the E88s, but then going back to amber. And one thing that kind of annoys me, actually, is that the car's green, the wheels are, let's say, yellow, and the amber turn signals, there's a lot of color going on. And so to have these silver Cup 1 wheels on the green, and so you've just got the green with a little pop of orange, it actually looks really, really good. And it made me want to get silver E88s, actually. But I do like the look of it. I love how it just looks classic 964. You know, it's kind of RS vibes. But then the other thing I did, so I bought turbo seats 2 years ago and I've had them sitting in storage. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I'm going to put them in the car. Even though they're the wrong color, I knew they were blue, so they were going to look ridiculous. But I just thought, I just want to put them in because if I'm going to have those seats recovered, I want to know that I actually like how they feel. So first up, I had to find them, right? Because I bought the seats and they came to the country disassembled. So I went to storage. I found three boxes. I'm like, okay, there's one seat back. There's one base. There's another base. Where's the other seat back?
Oh, man.
So, dude, I went to my business's storage unit. I'm in the roof of the house. I'm out in the shed in the garage. I can't find this seat back. And I'm like, how do you lose a seat back?
Breaking it.
It's not a small box. And it's not something that you go, oh, that's right. I put it in this cupboard. Because you would know. It's the kind of thing that's in the way if you have it in your house.
Yeah, right.
So, and then I was lying in bed one night and it suddenly occurred to me. I thought, oh, hang on. The two seat backs are in one box. They're top and tailing. So there was only ever three boxes.
Oh,
it had just been so long I'd forgotten. So anyway, so I get the seats, even reassembling the seats. I had no instruction, no understanding of how to do it. It was quite tricky. Got that done. And, you know, it was one of those projects where at every turn I ran into a problem. And getting the old seat out, the bolts are just, they go through the rails and then into a little, like a spacer that's threaded. And they are so, the way that thread works, they're just jammed tight. I finally get the old seat out. Put the new one in. The good thing is, even though they're listed as being navy seats, they're pretty much black. So I'm like, it actually doesn't look that bad in the car. So I put the first one in, took some faffing around to get it aligned, but once I did, it was really good. But then taking it for a drive, dude, it sounds like an old Jag or a Cadillac or something. It is so creaky. The leather is like,
oh, really?
I'm like, this is, I can't deal with this. Noise drives me nuts. So my buddy Gerard lent me a treatment that he'd used to soften the leather. That didn't really work. And then I tried another one that I had and that actually worked quite well. So, but at the moment I have one black seat and one, one beige seat because when I went to take out the passenger seat, the bolts, they're an Allen bolt hex wrench and I put it in and I thought, that doesn't feel really tight to me, as in there was a little bit of play. But also I needed extra leverage, right? So I got a spanner, kind of wrapped it around the edge of the end of the Allen key so that I could actually have some leverage. I start to pull it and then I feel it just go and I'm like, okay, it's either suddenly loosened or I've stripped it. And I've stripped it. So, at the moment, the car looks ridiculous because it has these two mismatched seats. But that said, the turbo seat it's a great seat. I wasn't convinced at first. It took a bit of getting used to, but that extra support is amazing. It's really, really, really good. So,
I based on the way this conversation was going, I'm half suspecting to hear that you're going to sell these seats and just get rid of them that have been sat in storage for a while. But you'll keep them.
Do you know what? I did toy with that exact idea. I was like, it's too hard. And I wasn't convinced by them at first. And I thought, maybe I'll just sell them. And then I jumped from the driver's seat into the passenger seat, which is a standard sports seat, and thought, oh, no, that actually doesn't have near as much support. And so, you know, because the alternatives are a pole position, which I love in a 964. I know your view on them, but you know, they are the seat that was in the 964 RS. But I have a few friends with pole positions in their cars, and I just find the shoulders push forward. I can't get comfortable in them. So Recaro Sportsters are the other option because they're a reclinable sports seat. They don't really look period correct, and you know, they come as standard equipment in a modern Renault. But that said, I've seen some really nice ones in old 911s. But anyway, I think the sports seats are the way to go. They're comfortable and super supportive, and as long as they're not creaking like a haunted house door, they're seemingly the right way to go. So anyway, the car's, it's good. It's in a kind of state of flux though.
Yeah, but so you got a little bit of time before Tassie to get it sorted.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
So get on it.
Yeah, look, all I'll do before Tasmania is I've got kind of a hit list of stuff that I just want to address from a servicing perspective before I go. I want to replace the clutch pin because that fails once every 18 months to 2 years. It's probably been that long. So just preemptively get that done. I want to make sure that the shifter linkage is all tightened up and secured. Mm-hmm. Brake pads, all that stuff. I just want to make sure everything's Mickey Mouse before putting the car on a boat.
All right. So Andy, let's move into our last segment of the pod. Video of the week.
Yeah, so we talked, I've talked about Forest Green Metallic a little bit on the pod today. And Lucas Scarenston.
Can't pronounce his name, can you?
So Lucas Scarfoni, I think is his name. He's an amazing automotive photographer.
Scarfone.
Lucas, I'm so sorry. Okay. I've shit. I've reached out to Lucas. I want to get him on the podcast. And he very graciously said he was really keen to come on. And then I've just absolutely butchered his name. This is worse than being late to interview Chris Clue. Anyway, so- Lucas is a great dude, and he's an amazing automotive photographer, and I've been following him on Instagram for a while because he has a Forest Green Metallic 992 GT3 Touring, and the spec on this car is just like utter perfection. And Project One, who makes some really, really cool automotive films in Toronto, I think, have made this film with him and his car. And, I mean, the cinematography, stunning. The car, spectacular, as you'd expect. But I actually really, really enjoyed Lucas's philosophy about this car. You know, he's one of these people who wants to drive it. He takes it to charity days and stuff like that so that he can, you know, share it with other people. And it just, he's sort of the opposite of the stereotypical Porsche guy. And in fact, he's the opposite of the guy we've been talking about who will buy the 911 ST. He's not only really driving this car and putting kilometers on it, and he's not putting kilometers on it for the sake of, you know, wanting to say he's done more kilometers than anyone else. He just decided this is what the car is designed to do. I'm going to drive it. I'm going to experience it as much as I can, and I'm going to share that experience with people. And I really like the way that's captured in this film.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. And he has what? The Touring?
992 GT3 Touring.
Beautiful.
Yeah, stunning spec. And like I say, Lucas, please accept my apologies for butchering your surname. We will get you on the pod and I will apologize in person. But as I said to you on DMs, absolutely, absolutely love this film and love your whole philosophy.
Yeah. All right. We'll check that out. That's what it's called, a culmination of passion.
A culmination of passion. And we will, of course, share the link to that unless we're banned from doing so.
Well, Andy, I think that's it for another pod.
Yeah.
I'm going to get more coffee. You can go and finish Dune. And spoiler alert, Captain Kirk arrives in the last scene and saves the day.
I was really hoping he would. Yeah, I mean, look, it's 10 p.m. now. I'm only half an hour in. There is no way I'm finishing Dune tonight. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the dog outside because he has been sitting here. I'm not kidding. He's been farting the whole time. And this, where I'm in my study, and it's a small space, right? Like it's pretty small.
You're the kind of guy that just like lets rip and then blames it on the dog. Uh-huh. I get it. Well, guys, thanks for chiming in. Thanks for listening to me and Andy waffle about Porsches. And if you are one of the lucky owners of the new 911 Sugar Tits, let's get you on the pod and just talk about how great it is.
Oh, yeah. Because you know what? How good would that be? Like, prove us wrong. We're such cynical old twats talking about how nobody's going to drive these cars. Yeah, let's. If you know someone, or you're the someone, and you've got a 911 ST, or you've got one coming, because obviously no one has one yet, we want to talk to you. In the meantime, James, it's been a pleasure.
All right. Good job, Andy. Take care.
You too, pal. And you guys all take care as well, and we will see you on the next one.
Cheers.